Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And we'll have more from Tokyo when we chat to Des Cahill a little bit later in the programme. But now, the live music and entertainment sector is in danger of collapse, according to a stark warning from the Minister for Culture and Arts, Catherine Martin. The Irish Times reports that Minister Martin raised her concerns in a letter sent to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Well, I'm joined on the line by some of the people from the industry who have seen their livelihoods affected. Morgan McIntyre is one half of Saint Sister, and Jenny O'Donovan is a wedding and events singer. Good morning to you both. Jenny, I'm going to start with you. How long have you been in the industry, the wedding and events industry? Jenny, there? We'll come back to Jenny. Morgan is with us. Morgan, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. So how have things been for you?
It's been a weird year, or a weird time in general. It was particularly difficult at the start. It's a little bit easier now. Things are kind of starting to kick off again and everyone's kind of found different projects to focus their energy on. But it's been difficult. It's already difficult to be a musician to begin with. So, yeah, it's made a difficult industry even harder to be
in. And Morgan, what were you doing when the pandemic hit? What was the plan?
We were in the States at the time. We were 4 dates into a 16-day tour supporting Keane. And we were delighted with ourselves. We were playing venues that we'd never played before. The last gig that we had, I think, was in the Dolby Theatre, where the Oscars were held the month before. So, yeah, we were just feeling really good about it all, and just finally settling into a tour when everything hit.
You were on the edge of something. Did it feel like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it did, and it's hard, especially. I mean, it's been difficult for us, but I really feel for artists that have just kind of started or would have just started at that time when. It's really all about the momentum, and it is about that kind of wind in your sails and playing those gigs and feeling that energy, because when that goes, it's just so hard to get that back, and it's hard to kind of to keep working and to keep momentum.
Yeah, it seems from this letter that the Minister has sent now to the Minister for Health that there's a real sense of urgency about getting the entertainment industry back. Do you think, though, thus far that there has been enough done to help you?
I mean, there has been a few different grants, and we've been lucky to avail of them, but I don't think there was ever enough emphasis placed on the arts and culture, and we were starting from a bad place. So much more could have been done, and there's so many people who've been priced out of their neighbourhoods and had to, loads of artists have been moved kind of elsewhere, and I think it's just a really difficult time to create in the cities of Ireland.
And some people left the industry because they had no choice for financial reasons. They had to go and do something else. Clearly you're going to go back in and hopefully try and pick up, are you, where you were?
Yeah, we were lucky enough to have something to focus on. We had our album that we released a month ago, and without that, I think we would have been a bit lost and a bit untethered, but having that to focus on was good, and it meant that we kept busy, and we've now got a few dates that have been, of course, moved back and back and back, and we've been having to reschedule a few of them, but fingers crossed that we can jump back in and try and build on whatever we were doing beforehand.
Okay, do you have something in the diary?
Yeah, we have an Irish and UK tour for November.
Okay, and let's hope that that can go ahead. Jenny is back with us now, Jenny O'Donovan, wedding and events singer. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Claire, how are you?
I'm good. I was asking there before the line dropped how long you've been in the industry.
Well, I've signed up as sole trader just over 5 years ago. Set myself up by myself, and so far, at the start it was obviously slow. You have to build up your clientele, and you know it takes a year or two sometimes for a wedding to come around. But the year COVID hit was going to be my big year for my career.
And in your house, both you and your partner were involved.
Yeah, my partner is my musician,
oh, okay.
So the two of us. We're onto the PUP, and you know it was a bit of a struggle. We're hoping to save for a house and everything. So in December, I just made a move to say, right, I need to get a job. So I got a job as a relief carer. So it means I can kind of work around if a gig came up or something came up, but it didn't because of lockdown for a long time.
And your partner did the same. He went and got a job as well.
Yeah, he's working in the civil service now. It's only recently, but yeah, he couldn't. It was too financially unstable for both of us. So it's just he's going to keep that on, and I'll work with him around weekends, and I'll get other musicians then during the week.
And what do you see as happening now? I mean, do you see light at the end of the tunnel, Jenny?
I do. It's very, I don't think it's getting closer at the moment. Like, there's no hint, there's no kind of guidance, or, you know, we're not getting any kind of, what's the word I'm looking for here?
There's no, like, indication, you feel, when things might be back, so you've got to carry on with the other work.
That's it. And very mixed messages, like, and for couples as well, it's so frustrating. Like, I'd be getting calls week before events, even, like, I had a couple hold on a day before I was supposed to perform, going, we still don't know, can we let you know tomorrow or something? Mm-hmm. And it was just like, okay, but that means you're holding on to work that you could potentially just lose out within 24 hours.
But does it give you some hope that this letter has been written now by the minister?
It is, like, definitely. Like, we need people in our corner. We need people to fight for us. Like we tried to do a protest there a while ago, and there was nothing came of it. You know, it's great that the numbers have gone up for weddings, but then they need to be entertained.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, look, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you both for talking to us, Jenny O'Donovan and Morgan McIntyre. And I'm joined by Kingston Mills now, who is Professor of Experimental Immunology at Trinity College Dublin. Good morning, Kingston.
Good morning, Claire.
So people took hope yesterday, didn't they, when Dr. Tony Holohan said if the rapid uptake of vaccines continues, NPHET would be optimistic that some of the remaining restrictions could be removed sooner than expected. What's your own assessment of the situation? Are we ready for further reopening?
I mean, we've seen a fantastic impact of the vaccine in terms of the number of cases in the older and now the middle cohort, and it's even down in the younger cohort with the numbers of cases in those groups significantly reduces. And the cases now are primarily in the people that have not been vaccinated, the younger people. So that does mean that the vaccines, I mean, it's further and further evidence that the vaccines really are working, and that once we get, you know, most or all of the adult population vaccinated, that we'll be in a good place. But of course, then we have to worry about the children. But in terms of, you know, easing restrictions, I think that, you know, as more people get vaccinated, that's going to be facilitated. So it's enabling those activities, and using the COVID vaccine certificate, I think, is a good way forward, not only for pubs and restaurants, but also for other events, whether it be cultural or sporting.
Well, a lot depends now, doesn't it, on the vaccine uptake amongst the younger people?
Yeah, I mean, there is some hesitancy, but what I would say to younger people or their parents, if they're thinking about, you know, maybe not vaccinating, just think about the consequences of getting COVID-19. In a lot of young people, it's a quite mild disease, but in some, it can be very serious. It can result in hospitalization. It can result in long-term symptoms that persist for weeks and months. So it really is a disease you want to avoid getting even when you're young. So the benefits of the vaccine really outweigh the risks. So I would encourage everyone to go out there and get vaccinated.
Do you have any concerns about schools coming back, all of the schools from primary to secondary, even through to third level?
Yeah, I think the third level probably going to be in a better place, because most of the third level students should be vaccinated before term opens, and the universities have in place now, or at least they're putting in place systems for testing twice weekly. We in Trinity, we're testing, and we'll have a program in place, so the universities are doing the same. So I think universities are in a good place. When I say testing, I mean this rapid testing by either antigen testing or LAMP testing. I think the schools are a little different, because by September, you know, very few school children are going to be vaccinated, and that's where the most of the cases are. Already we have 10% of all the cases right now are in under 12s, and there's another 17% in the 13 to 18 year olds. And come September, virtually all the cases, not all, but a lot of them will be in the under 18. So, you know, if you open a school where there's even one case of COVID-19, that's going to spread very rapidly. This Delta variant spreads, and then the whole school is going to get it, or it's going to be closed. So without having in place either a vaccination program in schools or testing programs, we could see significant numbers of cases in schools if they open without vaccines or testing in September.
That leads to the inevitable question then, should we be considering vaccinating 5-year-olds up to 12?
Yeah, I mean, that's something for the future. I think the priority has to be to get the secondary school children vaccinated, so all the 13, 12 to 18-year-olds. You know, there are cases, there's 10% of the cases, I said, are in the under-12s. And that's where, you know, once you've vaccinated the secondary school children, that's where it's going to remain. And, you know, it's a very mild disease in those age groups, but there are significant numbers, with 1,000 cases in the last 2 weeks in 5 to 12-year-olds in Ireland. Okay. So that's not insignificant.
I want to ask you about something we heard yesterday on this programme from Professor Corina Butler, the chair of NIAC, because I know you're a big advocate for mixing vaccines. So the people who had AstraZeneca had to wait a period of time to get a second shot of AstraZeneca, and you wanted them to have an mRNA, didn't you? And she said that she has given, or NIAC has given advice on this to the Department of Health. Now, she wouldn't tell us what that advice was, but here's what she said. The international data on mixing different brands of COVID vaccine for the first and second doses had been very encouraging, but NIAC have been waiting to see all that data before making a recommendation. And she said that the advice has gone to the department in the last couple of weeks. What did you make of all that?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the advice is, because I haven't seen it, but I assume, based on what I've heard in the media, that the advice has been not to mix vaccines for at this stage. That flies in the face of a lot of international evidence from other countries.
Well, I took the opposite from what she said. She said the international data on mixing different brands of COVID vaccine had been very encouraging.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, that's right. But, I mean, why haven't they implemented it then? Wish they happened. I mean, you know, I've been chatting at this 3 months ago, and others as well. And a paper published just recently in The Lancet from the UK, where they compared the antibody responses with two doses of the Pfizer vaccine versus two doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine. It was incredible to look at that data. The drop-off in the antibody response to the AstraZeneca vaccine, it started at a lower level and it dropped to virtually zero after 10 to more weeks, whereas the Pfizer, it was still higher after 10 weeks. And the starting level of the AstraZeneca antibody responses. So it just shows that the mRNA vaccines are much more potent at inducing protective responses. It makes absolute sense now to boost everybody that got the two doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine with an mRNA vaccine. There has to be no more procrastination on this, because you're leaving a vulnerable group of population potentially prone to getting infected because of drop-off in antibody responses.
Well,
so this has to happen.
The department has that advice, according to NIAC, so it's up to them what they do with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that's the advice, I'd be delighted. And I hope that they do instigate that. So putting boosters in place for those that either have underlying medical conditions, have poor immune response. The other things that they could do, which would be a very clever approach, is to measure the antibody responses in the individuals that are susceptible. And if they're at low levels, to boost them with mRNA.
I know you were listening to our musicians earlier on who are, you know, really want to get back to work, quite understandably. Are we there yet, do you think?
I think with judicious use of vaccine certificates and testing, that there's no reason why these activities can't resume. And it'd be great to see all the cultural and sporting events back in action again, but it has to be done safely. You can't just open the doors, and same with the schools. If you open and put a lot of people together, especially if they're not vaccinated, then it's inevitably there's going to be spread. So if it's done safely, I don't see a reason why not.
Well, thank you very much, Kingston Mills. Baptisms, communions, confirmations are set to resume. Zoom too. Priests throughout the country will be grappling, no doubt, with the very high demand from parents and children who were born as far back as the end of 2019 when it comes to baptisms and who are still waiting. Here to tell us how he's managing his baptism backlog is Father Joe MacDonald, parish priest in Selbridge and Strafford. Good morning to you.
Hello, Claire. How are you?
I'm good. It's going to be very tricky managing this spike in demand, I would imagine.
I tell you, Claire, it's unbelievable. People have no idea. We are absolutely snowed under. I mean, you know, I'm celebrating weddings that were scheduled 3, 4, and 5 times, for example. That phone is hopping in terms of baptisms, you know.
And you have to fit in the Holy Communions and the confirmations as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, and the Holy Communion and confirmations, in a sense, they're not top of my priority, and people might be annoyed about that. But I feel with the First Holy Communions, the children are still in the same school, you know, and we have a chance there. And I think, you know, there's nothing fixed in stone that you have to receive Holy Communion at 7 or 8 or whatever. So I know families are upset about that. From a sacramental point of view, there's not the same pressure. But I think when it comes to something like baptism, to me, I mean, it's the core, it's the initial sacrament, if you like. And we have to respond to that. And it really is overwhelming. You know, there's just a huge... But I think the broader thing, Claire, is that the spiritual voice in all this, you know, and how we've, you know, 5 years from now, when they're writing the book on this, it'll be interesting to see how they evaluate where was the... And I don't mean spiritual, by the way, Claire, in a very narrow, you know, obviously I have a Catholic perspective, but I mean our Muslim brothers and sisters, you know, all the Christian denominations, by and large in this island, there's a huge amount of people have a faith dimension to their life, you know, however that's expressed and so on. And I think that really, I'm not sure that voice was heard, and I'm not sure it was heard consistently throughout the pandemic. So there's a big catch-up, Claire.
Were those voices shouting loudly enough?
Well, probably not, yeah. I mean, I think generally speaking, I think our bishops, they're very nice guys, and I'm not suggesting that they don't have a toughness. I was disappointed on a number of occasions, and I'm not necessarily blaming the bishops on it. I wonder about how government responded to the whole religious practice question, you know, and I can understand that there can be bias against it, and I'd be the first to acknowledge, you know, the criticisms that we can make of institution and all that. But I think the point was missed that one of the things that suffered enormously, like I'm listening to the musicians there, and you'd really feel for them, and I think music is close to soul food anyway, so I'd be really hoping they get back soon. But even listening to Kingston and so on, the bottom line, Claire, is, look, we all have an inner world. Let's not, you know, fake about how we describe that inner world. And I think there's a thin line between our things like personality and interior life. And, of course, I prefer the word soul. But I think it has been badly neglected. And your question, you know, were they shouting loudly enough? Maybe not. You know, maybe, like, was there a bishop tossed the table or even thumped it? Probably not. Then from a government perspective, I had huge respect for the respective people involved in steering us through this, whether that began with Leo or now with the Taoiseach or whatever. But I wonder, did they really grasp? Did they respond to a religious request, thinking old-time devotional, narrow religion? Or did they understand that the sacrament of baptism is a very, very important part of family life?
And on the practical end, you're dealing with all of the people who are ringing you constantly, and we let you get back to taking some of those calls now. Thank you very much, Father Joe MacDonald, for joining us on the programme. Next up, we're going to speak to Professor Louise Crowley, who got COVID and is still dealing with the after effects.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.